Oh, little Bruce Springsteen to start a holiday. Hope that gave you a bit of a smile, too. Should have seen everyone else in this studio smiling at that one, too. Good morning, and welcome to a Labor Day edition of The Conversation. And to my right, Bill Sage, I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Well, it's been said that the laborer is worthy of his hire and that we should also judge not lest we be judged. So how's that work for you on this Labor Day?
It's a nice little segue. Thanks very much. And for something, it's a very, very serious issue. Now, today, a group of judges from around the world will consider their place in the justice of the environment. It's a follow-up to the establishment of the Global Justice Institute for the Environment, formed this past April. One of its key goals is to create more capacity. Brazilian High Court Justice Antonio Benjamin is the chair of the IUCN World Commission on Environmental Law. We talked early this morning about the global environmental courts, why there needs to be more of them, and what they face.
We have almost 1,000. Just China established more than 300 environmental courts. And more recently, Hawaii established its own environmental courts. All those courts are being established around the world to face not just local problems, but problems that are related to global trends. For example, climate change, the biodiversity crisis, protecting migratory species. So it's very important that we establish, as we have in other areas of law, a global institution, independent, run by judges, for judges, that is able to convene those judges and assist, especially with training programs, but also in some countries, it's not the case of Hawaii and the United States, in places where judges don't have enough resources in terms of literature and expertise, also to assist in those areas as well.
Do judges, as you talk to them around the world, understand that responsibility to the environment, which is a little different than it's the responsibility to people?
It's very different, not just a little different. And I'll try to explain, but to answer directly your question, I don't think judges at first realize this is a different task. And again, because in environmental law, and especially in respect to the global crisis that we're facing, we don't have much time. So judges, in theory, they could learn by themselves, but this would take time. It's more important for us to have those resources and be able to join hands with the judicial schools that train those judges in order to bring in capacity building. But as I said, this is a different area of law. Well, first of all, because some of the problems, in fact, many of those problems that the judges are facing, are not just local in nature. It's not like the increase of crime in a particular neighborhood or family law issues that are related to specific people in that jurisdiction. We could go on and on. Several environmental problems, although they might look local, they are regional in nature, and some of them are, in fact, international. So this is one difference, the dimension that those problems might have. And I'm not even speaking about climate change, because this is such a clearly global issue, and we judges, frankly, are not really prepared for addressing climate change. I would say that it's not just we judges, but also the legal, our domestic, our national, our state legal systems are not prepared for that. Another difference is the technical complexity of environmental law as opposed to some other areas, more traditional areas of law. And this puts enormous pressure on judges in remote parts of the world. We have to remember some of the most precious natural resources, you know, tropical forests, to mention one. Those most precious natural resources in the world are in quite distant and remote places of Earth. The Brazilian Amazon, for example. I live in Brazil, and the Amazon is 4,000 kilometers away, over 3,000 miles. So there are several differences which each one justifies by itself the establishment of the Global Judicial Institute for the Environment.
You talked about networking of judges who understand the global implications of what they're being asked to do and what they're being asked to learn. As we look at the United States, with Vermont having established its environmental court in 1990 and Hawaii only last year, are you disappointed in the United States?
Well, I'm not disappointed. In fact, I'm optimistic because we had Vermont first, as you said, establishing its environmental judges system, and then more recently Hawaii. The reason why I'm optimistic is because the Hawaiian model is much more sophisticated and, in my view, comprehensive than the Vermont. And, in fact, we are using the Hawaiian model as an example to other countries. First of all, this is not a system of administrative courts. For example, the Environmental Protection Agency, that's the case in many countries. So people, society tends to see those judges as not being real judges. Then there is another aspect that is very appealing in the Hawaiian system. The environmental judges begin not with exclusive jurisdiction, but with jurisdiction in other areas as well. So in other words, as the caseload increases, those judges will receive more and more exclusive jurisdiction. In some countries, this, the opposite system has been a problem. For example, in Kenya, the environmental courts were established, but for 4 years they didn't have any cases. They were almost disbanded. And if we establish a progressive system like you did in Hawaii, mm-hmm. this allows for the system, first to get recognition, credibility, more cases, and to strengthen itself. So I'm very optimistic. But of course, the United States is huge. Vermont and Hawaii are not exactly Texas or California in terms of size of the state. But in environmental law, we have to think not just in terms of size, but also in terms of the natural resources that exist in that state. And if we look at Hawaii, Hawaii is not just the Garden of Eden. If we had a GDP based on natural resources and the number of endemic and endangered species, extraordinary complex environment, Hawaii would be at the top. So I'm optimistic, and I see a strong commitment from the Hawaiians to the protection of the environment. Of course, problems exist, and that's why we judges exist as well, and the legal system is there to mm-hmm. face those problems. But the commitment of the judiciary, the Supreme Court, the federal courts, it is quite remarkable.
But clearly you want more from the United States, given the fact that there are many, many beautiful places aside from Hawaii and Vermont. And that should be part of the capacity building. So what is your message to the Hawaii Supreme Court in the meeting that you're going to be having with the justices here? And how do you see Hawaii's model moving through the United States as well as throughout the world?
My first message is to congratulate the Supreme Court and the judges. This is an extraordinary model, not just for the United States, but for the world. And in fact, it's already been advertised by us and by my colleagues around the globe. If you want to establish your environmental courts, look at Hawaii and look at the design of this model. But the Global Judicial Institute for the Environment is not just for environmental judges, because environmental cases are not decided just by environmental judges. Even if you have specialized courts at the trial level, those cases will move up in appeal. So it is important that non-specialized judges like me from the National High Court of Brazil and my colleagues at Supreme Courts from all over the world, both national and state, or even international courts, that we are also part of this capacity building program, because you don't learn environmental law in depth in law schools as we do with other areas of law. In reality, there are many countries in which environmental law is not taught in law schools. I have just returned from Congo Kinshasa, which has the third largest intact contiguous piece of tropical forest in the world. Environmental law is not taught in law schools. So how can you assign those tasks to judges that are not properly trained? So there, in those places, the task is even more difficult. Mm-hmm. So the Global Judicial Institute for the Environment is to do capacity building for specialized judges, but also for non-specialized judges, including those that are at Supreme Courts.
I want to thank you very much for the time that you were able to give us this morning, and I wish you a very good day.
Well, thank you very much.
Justice Antonio Benjamin of the National High Court of Brazil is the chair of the Brazil U.S. Law Society and the IUCN World Commission on Environmental Law. The colloquium on judges and nature meets this morning.